Welcome and good morning. Thank you for standing by. I'd like to inform all participants that your lines have been placed in a listen-only mode until the question-answer part of today's call. If you'd like to ask a question at that time, please press star followed by one on your touch-tone phone. Today's call is also being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Ms. Lauren Gracious. Thank you, and you may begin.
Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm Lauren Gacious with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. Today's update will feature three short presentations, followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded at http://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/briefings. The first presenter is Deke Arndt, climate scientist and chief of the Climate Monitoring Branch at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the November U.S. and Climate Report and the Drought Monitor. Our second presenter is Dr. James Angel, Illinois state climatologist from the Illinois Water Survey, who will discuss recent cold temperatures and impacts in the Midwest. And our final presenter is Brad Pugh, seasonal forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Nino-La Nina update, as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks for the next 3 months. Our first speaker will be Deke from NOAA.
Hi, and thank you, Lauren. This is Deke from NOAA in Asheville, and I'm going to give a brief overview of the state of the climate conditions as of November. If you go to slide number 2, it's titled Global Conditions. This gives a very quick overview of temperatures across the globe during the month of November. It was tied with 2004 and 2016 as the fifth warmest November on record. That's a record that dates back 139 years. This was largely driven by warm oceans. The oceans themselves were the second warmest November at about 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. Land areas were about 1.5 degrees above average, but because the land temperatures can swing much more from year to year, that's actually a little less unusually warm than the oceans. That was the 16th warmest November for land areas. Overall, for the globe, this was the 42nd consecutive November that was warmer than the 20th century average, and the 407th consecutive month overall that was warmer than the 20th century average. Looking a little more broadly at the season, September, October, and November, which is what we call autumn up here in the northern hemisphere and what they call spring in the southern hemisphere, that season was the second warmest on record at 1.44 degrees Fahrenheit, warmer than the 20th century average. And then the year to date is coming in at the fourth warmest on record. And so that's basically we've completed 11 laps of a 12-lap race. And the year-to-date temperature sits at fourth warmest. We introduced a new kind of statistically informed assessment of annual outcomes, and it is virtually certain that 2018 will go down in the record books as the fourth warmest year on our record. And you can see the time series on the right of the graph that shows basically the history of November global temperatures versus the 20th century average, fifth warmest at the rightmost part of that graphic. And then you can see on the map on the left that eastern North America, eastern U.S., and eastern Canada was pretty much the place on the planet that experienced cooler than normal November conditions, and much of the rest of the planet was neutral or warmer than normal. Zooming in on the U.S., more local to us here, slide 3, contiguous U.S. November 2018, it was a cooler than average month. This was the second consecutive cooler than average month. That's the first time in several years that we've had back-to-back cooler than average months. The average temperature was about 40 degrees Fahrenheit. That's about a degree and a half cooler than the 20th century average. The coolness was associated with basically the Mississippi River Valley, the Midwest, the Southern Plains, a little bit of the Ohio River Valley. That's where it was cool, and it was particularly cool in the afternoons in November. So the coolness that you see on this map, if we were to separate this out into afternoon and morning temperatures, the afternoon map showed more dramatically unusually cool conditions by a long ways than the morning map. You can see on the right how precipitation played out, and on both of these maps, as you go from left to right on the keys, the darkest colors indicate a place that had its record coolest, wettest, warmest, or driest November, and then as you go in, that's top or bottom 10% or top or bottom third of history. So on the precipitation map, you can see that parts of the Northeast, eastern Pennsylvania, had their wettest November on record, and then much of the eastern seaboard had a top 10%, a much above average November. It was quite a wet November east of the Mississippi River. Dr. Angel is going to speak about some issues that happened in the Midwest during the month, particularly a November snowstorm on the weekend of Thanksgiving. But that was one major event during the month. Of course, there was the large fire complex in California. Overall, with individual fires, the Camp Fire was the most notable fire of the month. 15,000 structures were destroyed. Overall, for the month, there were fewer fires than is typical for November, but the acres burned, and particularly the acres burned per fire, were quite large for the month. Moving on to the next slide to characterize the autumn conditions. This is slide number 4. Temperatures were near average in autumn when averaged across the country as a whole. That kind of belied three regimes, warmer than normal in the west, particularly west of the Rockies, cooler than normal in the plains, and then again warmer to much warmer than normal on the eastern seaboard. And this was even more dramatically so. The morning time temperatures in the east were very warm, and then the afternoon temperatures in the plains were very cool, and this is kind of the average of those. North Dakota had its 12th coolest autumn on record. It was warm along both coasts. It was particularly warm, and particularly warm in the mornings in the mid-Atlantic. And then the graphic on the right shows the autumn temperature series since 1895. This is the month of September, October, and November, and you can see that we're now working on a little more than 10 years in a row warmer than the 20th century average, which is represented by that dark gray line. Finally, looking at precipitation for November, this is probably the story of the autumn, was the wetness across most of the central and southern plains and the eastern U.S. It was exceptionally wet. You can see large patches of dark green indicating areas that had their wettest autumn on record. It was record wet for 7 states in the lower 48. It was quite dry in the Pacific Northwest, where drought intensified, and it was quite dry in the Florida Peninsula, but almost everywhere in between it was significantly wet. Western snowpack is generally behind average, particularly the farther west you go. The exception to this are the Cascade, Bitterroot, and San Juan ranges in the Rockies, but the Cascades have quite a bit less snow on them than is typical. The Central Rockies are a little snowier than is usual, but these three, again, I misspoke, I apologize, the Cascade, the Bitterroot, and the San Juans are the ranges that are particularly snow, lacking in snow depth. Finally, on the right, this is a time series graphic of mid-Atlantic precipitation each autumn since 1895, and it just shows how unusually wet this autumn was compared to the history for that region, and the top 5 years all occurring since 1979. And then the last slide before we hand off to Dr. Angel to look at the Midwest, 22.7, about a quarter of the country, is in drought. That's relatively flat compared to about a month and a half ago. There was some improvement south of a kind of an epicenter of drought. There is an epicenter of drought in the Four Corners region. We have seen some recent improvement on the southern fringes of that, but we've also seen some drought intensification in Northern California and Northern Oklahoma as well, bringing us to where we are this morning. And with that, I'll hand off to Dr. Angel, and he'll talk about some of the impacts in the Midwest.
Thank you, Deke. This is Jim Angel. I'm the state climatologist here at the Illinois State Water Survey on the campus of the University of Illinois. And in the next slide, we'll look at the rankings there of statewide rankings of temperatures. And you can see that core area in the central part of the U.S. that Deke was talking about of the very cold temperatures. In fact, it was the fourth coldest November on record for Missouri. And so the other ones were also in the single digits on the rankings there. And kind of what we talked about earlier is what's interesting is that it was most pronounced in the daytime high temperatures rather than nighttime low temperatures. So in terms of daily records that were set or broken, we had 382 tied and 1,220 broken records on the low temperatures. And most of those were concentrated in Kansas and Missouri and Illinois and Iowa. But if you look at the number of record low-high temperatures, I know that's always a funny way to say that, but it's the coldest high temperatures. There we had over 500 tied and 1,500 broken, so it was much more of those. And those were spread out pretty much across the eastern two-thirds of the U.S., so that those colder temperatures in the daytime were very pronounced and caused quite a few records. On the next slide, where we look at the Thanksgiving weekend blizzard, that was an interesting one. It was a storm system that tracked across the Rockies and across the Central Plains and really got going as it went through Kansas and Missouri and Iowa and Illinois. Probably hardest hit in terms of air transportation was Kansas City, where they had about 50% of their flights were canceled on the 25th. And O'Hare, where about 25% of their flights were canceled on that day. And that's that was the Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend. Of course, that's one of the busiest travel holidays of the year. And so it really caused quite a few problems both in flying and driving during those, during that time period there. So we had some areas, especially in Iowa and Illinois, they're actually in full-blown blizzard conditions. So lots of snow, low visibility and very high wind speed. So there were some areas that got over a foot of snow out of that particular event. So it's kind of a little early for us, and after coming off of a fairly quiet part of the first part of November there was quite a change there, we'll put it that way. So there was big impacts across the region because of that. There was an earlier ice storm around the mid-month that hit more of the southern part of the Midwest. For example, in Kentucky was hard hit by an ice storm that caused quite a bit of damage there. On the next slide, where we've got the history of November temperatures, there isn't a region that exactly matches the core area of what we saw this November, but close is the upper Mississippi River Basin that kind of captures the heart of it. And the point here is that while we have seen warming Novembers over time, it hasn't matched like what we see at the global or national level. It's been a little less pronounced, but it is warming. And if you look at the numbers for this year, in that particular area, it was several degrees below the long-term average. But it was followed by 2015 and 16 were actually well above average, and then preceded by that by 2014 that was much colder. So very cold this year. We had to go back to 2014 to see something comparable in terms of the coldness. And then we had before that a long stretch of fairly mild Novembers across the central U.S., and you'd have to go back to like 1996 to see something quite as comparable as that. So it's a bit unusual in the short term, but in the long term, it's not that unusual to see very cold Novembers like that. So there's a lot of year-to-year variability in those numbers. So with that, I think that's all I have to say about those conditions. So I'll turn it back over to Brad.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Yeah, this is Brad Pugh, a meteorologist and a seasonal forecaster at the Climate Prediction Center. And the next slide, which is number 10, taking a look at ENSO currently. In the upper left-hand corner are the average sea surface temperature anomalies during the past month. And that shows that above normal sea surface temperatures persist throughout the tropical Pacific, with the largest anomalies greater than 1 degree Celsius above normal along and east of the dateline. Despite the above normal sea surface temperatures, though, throughout the equatorial Pacific, neutral conditions continued through November, as atmospheric convection has remained near average. We haven't seen that atmospheric response to the warmer than normal sea surface temperatures. In the lower left-hand corner is the CPC IRI official ENSO forecast with probabilities of El Nino, La Nina, or neutral conditions. And you can see in the bar graph there, El Nino does have a 90% or greater chance of developing during the next 3 months. So we are expecting it to develop and continue through the northern hemisphere spring. As you look at well ahead into the future towards next summer, odds for El Nino decrease, but they remain the favored outcome. So moving along to the next slide, the monthly forecast for January 2019. Left-hand side is the temperature outlook, and shows enhanced odds for above normal temperatures throughout the western U.S., also Alaska. Highest odds for above normal temperatures forecast for the Pacific Northwest and also the Alaska Panhandle. East of the Rockies, equal chances of below, near, or above normal temperatures are forecast due to a variable temperature pattern expected during the month, although there is a slight tilt in the odds for below normal temperatures forecast for the southeast and parts of the mid-Atlantic. In terms of precipitation during January, above normal precipitation is favored along the Gulf Coast and also parts of southern Alaska. Two areas of below normal precipitation are favored for the Ohio Valley and also the Pacific Northwest. And the next slide is our seasonal forecast, which covers the 3 months, January, February, and March. And the temperature forecast for the season is quite similar to the monthly forecast, with the highest odds for above normal temperatures throughout the western U.S., north to Alaska. Large area of equal chances of below, near, or above forecasts for the south central and much of the eastern U.S., once again due to that variable temperature pattern expected during the next 3 months. A slight tilt in the odds for below normal temperatures are forecast, though, for the Tennessee Valley and southern Appalachians. And our seasonal precipitation outlook calls for increased chances of above normal precipitation for the southwest, southern Great Plains, Gulf Coast states, northward into the mid-Atlantic, also parts of Alaska. Below normal precipitation, most likely for the Ohio Valley and Pacific Northwest. And finally, our last slide here is the seasonal drought outlook. Currently, very little drought exists across the central and eastern U.S. There has been a small area of short-term moderate drought to develop over South Florida, giving the expectation for El Nino to develop and increase chances for above normal precipitation during the next 3 months. That drought area is forecast to end during the next 3 months. Across the west, persistence is forecast for the Pacific Northwest. That's related to the low snowpack currently over the Cascades, and also the seasonal outlook calling for a drier than normal pattern. The most likely area to see drought improvement includes central Southern California, the Intermountain West, and where we have more long-term entrenched drought persistence is forecast for the Four Corners region. And that's all for the PowerPoint here.
Thanks, Brad. We'll now take specific questions from the call participants. Please be sure to identify who you would like to answer the question that you're asking, if possible. And operator, if you could please remind the call participants how they can go about asking a question and queue up the first one.
Thank you. We will now begin the question answer session. To ask a question, please press star followed by one. Please ensure that your phone is unmuted and record your name clearly when prompted. Again, that is star followed by one to ask a question. To withdraw, press star two. One moment while we wait for questions to come in. Our first question comes from Bryce Anderson. You may go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for your briefing today. Brad, I have a question about the mechanics that may be involved in the factors that you're citing for the long-range forecast for this season. There has been some discussion, I'm sure you've been aware of it, about some possible wavering, if you will, of the polar vortex out over the North Pole, and the influence of that maybe leading to some pretty cold developments over the central part of the country during the next few weeks, or even a little bit farther on into the winter season. Do you have a comment on that, and does that possibility enter into any of your prediction thoughts at all?
Yeah. Hi, Bryce. So the models are showing a stratospheric warming event over the next couple of weeks, which could lead to a displacement or split in the polar vortex, and which could eventually lead to a colder pattern for eastern North America. But that's no guarantee that that'll materialize. The major factors for the temperature outlook are dynamical model consensus, long-term trends, and also the typical influence you see with El Nino. We'll say in terms of like the polar vortex, how that may play out, that will likely be captured a little bit better on our sub-seasonal forecast, weeks 2 through 4, and also our updated January forecast, which comes out at the end of the month, New Year's Eve.
Okay, could I ask a question about ENSO also?
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. And that is, considering that, you know, that the atmospheric convection hasn't been developing that much. The Southern Oscillation Index values are just kind of hanging around neutral. In fact, there's been some of the last few days readings actually rather in the positive category, kind of a La Nina category almost. Are you concerned about this at all? Have you seen this type of slow sinking up feature that has maybe gone on before? And by the way, I did read Emily Becker's blog about this feature as well, but I wanted to get your thoughts also.
Yeah, so a major player this fall so far has really been the Madden-Julian Oscillation. As you mentioned, the atmosphere really hasn't responded to the warmer-than-normal sea surface temperatures. Also, the trade winds have remained close to average across the equatorial Pacific. We're expecting a 90% chance that the atmosphere will couple to those warmer than normal sea surface temperatures, though, in the next month. The next ENSO advisory comes out early January, I believe January 10th.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And again, thanks everybody for your briefing. Much appreciated.
You're welcome.
There are no further questions at this time. Once again, to ask a question, please press star followed by one.
This is Lauren. I'm not seeing any further questions. So if that's the case, we will go ahead and we'll wrap up the call. First, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and to everyone else for participating in the conference call today. I'll end by reminding everyone to mark your calendars for some upcoming releases. The December annual release of the U.S. Climate Highlights is expected on January 7th. Oh, I'm seeing just a few additional questions, so I will I'll pause and let you move to those.
The next question comes from Dulles Rice. You may go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for doing this. Just kind of questioning what's the latest on that that warm blob that we're hearing about once in a while just off the kind of off the Pacific Northwest coast there in the Pacific. Just any updates on that and what role it's playing in any of the climate predictions? And also, I guess this would be for Brad.
Yeah. Hi. The above normal sea surface temperatures there in the that you're referencing in the North Pacific. So yeah, that that didn't play a really any role in our thinking for the seasonal outlook. That can change fairly quickly in terms of a anomalies. It can respond to the atmospheric circulation pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So, as mentioned earlier, we're playing more a consensus of the dynamical models, long-term trends, and ENSO composites.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
Our next question comes from Craig Miller. You may go ahead.
Hey, guys. I'm sorry I was a little late coming onto the call this morning, and so sorry if you're if I'm forcing you to be redundant, but regarding the ENSO forecast, since the since it's only the stronger El Niños that seem to have much real impact on California precipitation, is there can you sort of handicap what you think the strength of this one's going to be?
Yeah, if we do see the atmosphere couple to the ocean over the next month or so, right now the projections are for a weak to perhaps moderate El Nino to form.
Okay. So history would kind of indicate then that probably wouldn't have a significant impact on precip here for us, or at least wouldn't have a predictable impact. Maybe that's a better way to put it. So when you say the atmosphere will couple, how does that affect that?
But yeah, when the saying that, what I mean by atmospheric coupling to the oceanic conditions, we see enhanced convection, more rainfall near the dateline and east of the dateline along the equator. And for California, the seasonal precipitation outlook calls for just a slight tilt for below normal precipitation over far northern California. But equal chances of below, near, or above across the remainder, or most of the remainder of the state. So quite a bit of uncertainty for the seasonal precipitation outlook in California.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, you're welcome.
The next question comes from Wes Forbes. One moment, please.
And I pulled up my order.
You may go ahead. Mr. Forbes?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry. I had a question, I guess, also for Brad. I saw in the monthly forecast for January, it was pretty targeted spot over the Tennessee Valley. I was curious if you could speak to that and what maybe some of the contributing factors are to the colder weather in that area.
Sure. So, the reason we're, highlighting that area with the highest chances, although the probabilities are still fairly low there, if the high latitude blocking, which some of the models are showing later in January, that does develop, which the CFS model and also the European models show in weeks 3 and 4, so early to mid-January, that would contribute to a negative Arctic oscillation. And typically with a negative Arctic oscillation, you have more anomalous cold centered across the Tennessee Valley, southern Appalachians. And some of our monthly models, that was the consensus or the better model agreement for below normal temperatures would be for that region as well.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, I think that was our last question for real this time. Thank you guys so much again and for your patience. I'll go back over those two dates. The December annual release of the U.S. Climate Highlights is scheduled for January 7th, and then the December annual release of the Global Climate Highlights is scheduled for January 17th. Finally, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory site in the next hour or so. If you have any further questions or informational needs, please don't hesitate to reach out to me, lauren.gacius@noaa.gov. My contact information is also available on the top of the media advisory. This concludes today's call, and I thank you all so much.
Thank you for participating in today's conference. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please stand by for post-conference.